Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Okay, hi everybody, and good evening to you. This morning we were working on triangles from the practical point of view and the exercises that the Tibetan has given us, and now we're going to look at the more solar systemic kind of understanding and beyond, of course. So more the cosmic idea of what the triangles stand for. We're still working in esoteric psychology, rather astrology number two, and I'm just trying to make sure that I have everything that I need. Oftentimes, Parabrahm would be a good thing to put up, wouldn't it? So that's what I'll do. This is the Theosophical chart of Parabrahm, coming from 1 year before 1900. You kind of wonder how far it goes and whether these cosmic planes with a capital K do actually represent sort of the second map that we find on 344. And I'm going to get to that in just a second, as what I always like to do is get Tuya's diagrams up here. And the evolution of a solar logos is what it's called. And yeah, here we go. So maybe these cosmic planes are the following ones, but really things go far beyond all of that. Yet with our little human minds, perhaps we can begin to grasp what's going on down here, which has to do with soul consciousness and building the Antikorana and so forth. We're just not there yet, you know, and but neither is neither is the Christ or the Buddha. They still find their area of expression on the cosmic etheric physical plane, but they're beginning to respond to the cosmic astral plane. And as for what the Tibetan has said, well, he said, look, I can't really tell you that much about it because I just haven't been there. But at least he's got the right kind of information that we never know for sure whether we have or not. So just kind of want to welcome you here, Anne-Marie and Annette and Brennan and Catherine and Ishtar, Joan and Karen, Mariut, Martha, Nienke and Norman, Risto, Tia, Walter, and Zenaide, and over here on the right-hand side, BL and Tui are giving me a hand with some things in case I get into technical difficulty, which is certainly always possible. Now, we've been reading, well, let's just have a little alignment. I think that'd be the thing to do before we get back into our reading in esoteric astrology, which deals specifically with the signs of triangles in that 100-page section. So we reach out towards each other, and we realize that we are building, each one of us, a kind of a tiny triangles network, whether it's one triangle or 10 or 25 or 50, whatever it happens to be, it's still just a small contribution to the planetary triangles network, but a significant contribution if we approach it with depth of feeling and with strength of will and with a open heart and a mind open to the light. And we will work together to try to gain an understanding of the planetary and extra systemic, extra solar systemic energies beyond the solar system. Actually, we're pretty used to that, really, because we're used to the idea that the planets carry for us a certain potency, and that their movements do affect the process through which we are living. And we're also very used to the idea that the signs of the zodiac in our natal and progressed and directed horoscope have a very strong influence upon our incarnated lives, and those are cosmic energies. You know, the if you really think about the larger structure, this little triangle up here, I have named our local one about whom naught may be said. And, you know, just like a human being, this great being, a super cosmic logos, has its own head center and its own heart within the head center. And believe it or not, you know, if you think about it, the zodiac of constellations, our zodiac of constellations, is the heart in the head center of this great being in whom we are just the tiniest little, well, can't even say we're a cell. We're more like an atom, you know. So we fit within these greater beings, and in them we live and move. We live and move and have our being. Want to make sure that, you know, you can hear me here. So we'll open our consciousness to an awareness of these qualities. Now, look, you know, when you work together with me in the Identify as Being webinar series and study series, we're not talking about quality. We're talking about beingness, be-ness, being. You know, we're talking about isness. We're talking about the raw fact of isness, which things of any quality can share. Whether, you know, it's a dog or a lamp, they both are. The quality of business is there, or to the nature of business, but not the quality. But now, what we're talking about is precisely quality. We're in the realm of the soul, and we are reminded by the Tibetan of the triplicity, a triangle, life, quality, and appearance. He elaborates on this very much as he works in Esoteric Psychology 1, and he tells us that the soul is the quality of life. The soul is the quality of life. So we're dealing with qualities, and I'm going to have a couple of questions to ask you and see if you can think about it and what you would come up with. Now, over here is our reading, and we ended with an examination of now let's get this clear into our minds, of Cancer and Capricorn working through Saturn and affecting the aspirants of the world. Okay, so Sirius forms a triangle with Cancer and Capricorn, and then Cancer and Capricorn along with Saturn form another triangle, and this applies to those who are aspiring to tread the path. Then those who have found themselves upon the path, and there's a question of where the path really begins. Sometimes we say it begins in Libra, and it has to do with being a real disciple and with having taken the first initiation. We have the Pleiades. You never know how many, but let's just say for the seven major ones, working through Gemini and Sagittarius to working through Mercury. So we've got a triangle there of the Pleiades, Gemini and Sagittarius. It's ruling the path and maybe kind of a third aspect in a certain sense. And then we have this interesting light in the mind kind of triangle between Gemini, Sagittarius, and Mercury. And Mercury is not only associated with Gemini, but if you read the Sagittarius chapter, you will see that Sagittarius seems to have wings on its heels and passes through the Geminian gate in order to enter the wisdom. And then we have the highest triangle, and that highest triangle is coming from the Great Bear, which in the nature of things rules the seven interior head centers of this great logos that we are living in, the one about whom naught may be said. And so the idea is that we have the Great Bear working through Aries and Libra. Aries and Libra are working through the sun as it can be seen veiling Vulcan. And in some respects, Uranus is strong because Aries is the highest ruler, Uranus is the highest ruler of Aries and the esoteric ruler of Libra. And Uranus, ruling cosmic electricity, we might say, Uranus is the home of the logos of the first ray. Every time he says home, think about the monadic level. Venus is the home of the planetary, of the logos of the sixth ray. So the sixth ray monad of Venus is prominent. So it's a very ray one planet, and I think it's on page 420 or 421 of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. It gives us the highest rays in a triangle of the first three planets, the synthesizing planets, we might call them. And I'll show you that because I think it's interesting. And you say, well, isn't Uranus seventh ray? Yes. Isn't Neptune sixth ray? Yes. And as far as Saturn goes, it's kind of a blend of third ray, a lot of third ray and first ray. Take a look here in Esoteric Astrology. No, it's not astrology. It's Psychology, Volume 1. And we go to page 420 to see another very important triangle. Keep note of these triangles. And there we are. Actually, it's a page right before 421. And notice how he talks about that. Esoterically, the principle of vitality or prana is seated at the center at the base of the spine, which Pluto is ruling and which is so important in relation to Mercury, in relation to Mars. There's the triangle right there. If you have Pluto and Mercury and Mars, you've got a triangle which is involved with the base of the spine. But here we go. Here are the, esoterically speaking, now that's a hint, he's talking about the monad. Esoterically speaking, the planets, which are the expression of the three major rays, are ray 1, Uranus, ray 2, not ray 6, Neptune, and ray 3, we might have expected, is Saturn. So there we have the monadic rays of the first three planets, the synthesizing planets, we might call them. They're the three most powerful planets eventually. Yeah, okay, let's see. What does it say here? A study of this will make it apparent why Saturn is ever the stabilizer. It's not the deity which brings doom and disaster, but it brings stability and the opportunity to work off karma and to be free. In this present cycle, and everything changes all the time according to the law of mutation, so he says one thing, then he says something else, and the only difference is the time at which it is occurring. And we tend to say, oh, DK, he contradicted himself. But no, according to the law of mutation, those changes occur. So in the present cycle, The two powers, the two rays of power and love, are directing their energies to Vulcan and Jupiter. Isn't that interesting? What that really means is ray one passing through Uranus is directing itself, its energies towards ray one, Vulcan's soul, and ray two, Neptune, the monad of Neptune, ray two, is directing it to the soul of Jupiter, ray two, while Saturn's attention is turned towards our planet Earth. And I did go through this before, but you well know there is a being called the Holy Spirit, at least in our, let's see, here it is, I think. No, it's over here. Oh, no, I'm going to have to get it at someplace else. Let's see where I can go to get, there it is. This green being here is the Holy Spirit for the solar system. And it works through, believe it or not, Saturn, Mars, and the Earth. The Earth, our Earth, is the physical body, the physical etheric body within the personality of this great being that we sometimes call the Holy Ghost, Holy Spirit, Brahma, etc. Okay, I hope you pick some of that up a little bit. And then at least bear in mind that there is this triangle. See, just write down some of these triangles and it'll be a jigsaw puzzle and it will start to collect in your mind. And pretty soon this thing that DK teaches is, you know, the way he teaches, it's called meticulous entirety. It'll begin to link all of these different factors. And then you're on your way to developing intuitive, pure reason. So Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn have a very high meaning as rays 1, 2, and 3. If you go into your esoteric astrology book, at the very end of the book, maybe there's another 70 to 100 pages which deal with all kinds of references from the secret doctrine and from a treatise on cosmic fire. And they really fill in what might not have been discussed in the astrology book itself, but what needs to be brought into relation with what is discussed in the astrology book. Okay, so that was a little dilation there. So we have six signs of the zodiac: Cancer, Capricorn, Gemini, Sagittarius for the path, Aries, Libra for the path of initiation. And then he talks about two more, Taurus and Scorpio, which works its way through Mars. That's another triangle. So this these seven solar systems, of which ours is one, ours is the heart center of the seven solar systems, work through Taurus and Scorpio, and then finally work out through Mars as well. And whether it's the solar plexus or whether it's the sacral center, I really thought a lot about it being having to do with the middlemost center in a way, which is the solar plexus. And there's a lot of ray four in there and a lot of conflict. And of course, our star is very interesting. The sun is a yellow star. So what color is it? That what ray comes through yellow or is associated with yellow? And you probably know that it is the fourth ray. So this middle center, you might say, or one of the middle centers, I think we're living in a big solar plexus. But of course, it may turn out that it's a big sacral center. After all, I don't think that a decision can be made on that. So that's a little review. But now, before I go ahead, there are four signs of the zodiac left. And I'm going to do some uncharacteristic thing here. I'm going to ask you a question before I get to the end of my talk. And I'm going to say that there is the sign. I'll give them to you sort of in a particular order. Virgo. Leo, Virgo, Aquarius, Pisces. Leo, Virgo, Aquarius, Pisces have not yet been mentioned. Now, that's kind of a quadrangle. And I'm just going to ask you, do you see a pattern in Leo, Virgo, Aquarius, Pisces? And if you do see a pattern, then either write it down or raise your hand or tell me what you see. Do you see any pattern or progression in those four remaining signs, because we have not dealt with them yet? Okay, so Walter?
Yeah, you have.
Okay.
You have a couple of hands.
Okay, oh. So I've got Walter, and then I'll, you know, if he, go ahead, Walter.
Yeah, I see that it can be like a microcosm of the Ray 1, 2, 3 oppositions with the other six signs. Because Leo Aquarius, that could be a bit of Ray 1, especially with Aquarius related to Uranus. And the Virgo Pisces definitely has a strong Ray 2. And then the Taurus Scorpio that was mentioned, since that has Mars, that was already mentioned, that can have a little bit of the Ray 3 in it. So it seems a bit like that those opposite signs are, again, related to Rays 1, 2, 3, but maybe in a slightly more extenuated or manifested fashion.
Yes, I think what you're saying is valid. Now, I just want to comment on the Rays. That through Virgo Pisces, well, through Leo Aquarius, at this time comes the fifth ray exclusively in terms of what DK mentions, with Leo holding the maximum position for the fifth ray and handing it over to Aquarius before long. It will be in rotation, so to speak, in that triangle, and Aquarius with Leo and Sagittarius will take the uppermost position. So we do have a fifth ray factor going on there, but you know, whenever he just mentions one ray, there is absolutely no way that a great being only manifests one ray. It's just that the other rays are less impressive at the particular time, and he usually hints at what they may be. Now, when it comes to Virgo and Pisces, the rays are the same. And you were right, you know, it's a strong second ray, but in both of them, they give us the sixth ray. So I think that, you know, your analysis of the rays there is correct, more or less. And I think that now what we want to look for is a psychological process which involves these three. So let's see if we can zero in on that just a little bit. BL, who else was here? Anybody?
Yes, Ishtar has her hand up, and Karen had typed in something in the comments. So.
Okay, so let's take a look at the comment here. And then we'll go to Ishtar. Leo represents the individual consciousness, Virgo the Christ, the soul consciousness, Aquarius group consciousness, and Pisces universal consciousness. Okay, you're right there, and that's exactly the progression, Karen. Okay, Ishtar, I got you there. So that's it. Starting now, look, this is the way it starts. They also represent other things, but Leo is the individual, Virgo is the Christ, Aries is the cosmic Christ, but Virgo is the individual Christ, Aquarius brings us to group consciousness, and it's also a sign of the universal, and Pisces gives us a certain pervasive wisdom, which is really the highest identificatory consciousness. So, you know, Christ, I'd say his major sign is Pisces, the cosmic decanate. See, there's another triangle. If I give you the triangle that goes like this, Taurus, Scorpio, Pisces, you think of the three great teachers. You think of Buddha on the third ray. You think of Hercules in Scorpio on the first ray, and you think of Christ in Pisces on the second ray. So Pisces is the sign of summation, and I would say, although Gemini is so important for the Christ, the head of the cosmic Christ, that Pisces is really his ultimate sign. If I give you a triangle, see, I'm going to play that game, you know. If I give you a triangle that looks like this, I won't necessarily give it in, well, I can give it an order. Gemini, Libra, Pisces, and I say it's related to the Christ, what would you say? You see, what would you say if I say Gemini, Libra, and Pisces? Does anybody have an idea there? That is an important triangle involving, I believe, the horoscope of the Christ. Okay, let's see now. I think so Ishtar, you your hand bumped there. Okay, and that's, you know, anybody that wants to answer, address themselves to that, you can let me know about that. But not to waste too much time here, I'm just going to do it like this. I believe the horoscope of the Christ is the, I think, you know, every master is characterized by two signs particularly. The master KH by Gemini Pisces, Sun and Gemini Pisces rising. The Buddha by Taurus Pisces, Sun and Taurus Pisces rising. There's a different thing with Moria. It's Aries and Leo. I'm not sure which is which, but Aries and Leo, two great, the Sun is exalted, the great ruler there, and the Christ. I believe it's Sun and Pisces, Libra rising. So Gemini tells us that the Christ is, that Gemini is the head of the cosmic Christ. This is how we are told by the Tibetan, and one of my friends who's an astrologer kind of put the sign, the constellation Gemini, on top of Orion and said, well, there you have it. There's Gemini as the head of the cosmic Christ. Libra, well, let's see, Pisces is his sun sign. He's achieved that. Others are working towards it. He is the savior. And Libra, he is in alignment with the spirit of peace, and he's called the Prince of Peace. So that's the way we would take a look at the three constellations related to the Christ. Okay. And I don't know about the Tibetan. I've had the feeling that he is Gemini and Taurus. Whether Sun and Taurus and Gemini rising the other way around, I'm not sure, but he certainly is the messenger of the masters, and I believe that the great light of Taurus and the profound communicability of Gemini characterize him, but let's see another time. I'm pretty sure about Gemini because so many of the people who worked with him are the Gemini types. Alice Bailey, Sun in Gemini, Mary Bailey, Sun in Gemini, Foster Bailey, Gemini rising, Sun in Pisces, and there was another one, but anyway, oh yes, another one too. Marion Walters, I believe she had the Gemini ascendant with the Sun in Scorpio. It's a little different. Okay, so now moving on, we have, you've answered that well. we have in progression, as Karen indicated, the sun in, we have Leo, individual consciousness, Virgo, individual Christ consciousness, Aquarius, group consciousness, and Pisces, identificatory universal consciousness. I mean, Christ knew what was in man, and he had immediate identification with any human being, which is what Pisces ultimately can give us. So spent a lot of time there on that, but it's worth it. Behind every constellation of the zodiac is a progression, and here is the progression. I deliberately didn't go there because I wanted to see what you would, you know, come up with. And these four constellations remain after we've done the others that are connected with Sirius, Pleiades, and the Great Bear. So as you see, self-consciousness, Christ consciousness, group consciousness, universal consciousness. Now, however, let us also remember that Aquarius is the sign of universal love, whereas Pisces is the sign of pervasive wisdom. Those are factors that he gives later in the book in connection with Jupiter. And actually, if you look at every one of these signs or constellations, I'm going to use the word signs and constellations interchangeably. The energy does come from the constellation, but it is adapted for use on Earth through a Devic atmosphere that we call a sign. So sometimes it is said that it's not really the sun that rules Leo. It is Jupiter. And DK hints at that. And then when we look at the hierarchical ruler of Virgo, it is Jupiter. And when we look at the esoteric ruler of Aquarius, it is Jupiter. And when we look at Pisces and the ordinary ruler, it is Jupiter. So we can see how much this inclusive kind of Christ consciousness is growing under the influence of Jupiter. They are not the usual rulerships given, but he does hint at them, and they are present. So these four, he says, they are basically concerned with the expression of consciousness on the outer external planes of expression, or with the fusion, now that's Jupiter again, of soul and form in order to demonstrate fully a state of awareness. And of course, Jupiter again represents the possibility of fullness and completeness. In a way, you know, you can't really have the sun or the moon as the ruler of a constellation of the zodiac. They're always veiling something. You know, usually they're veiling Vulcan or Neptune or Uranus. The moon is always doing that, and the sun is oftentimes veiling Uranus or Vulcan. But in one instance, and you have to read very carefully, maybe it's in the Leo chapter, I'm not sure where exactly or now, he does tell us that to look for the sun veiling Jupiter when it comes to the ordinary rulership of Leo. Okay, and that somehow fits. These facts will become apparent if the four esoteric planets connected with these four constellations are considered and related. So the sun, it rules Leo, and it represents the soul. Well, the sun can represent a lot of things. That's the thing, it's a star, really. And it can represent the entirety of the personality. It can represent the solar angel and the solar egoic lotus, and it can represent the monad too. In this particular case, he's pointing to the idea of soul. Now, what's interesting here is if you take the three fire signs, a fire triangle, you know, Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. It is the Leo that represents the soul, Aries represents the monad, and Sagittarius represents the personality and the physical body. And you actually, that works out in life. You see, you know, so many people expressing their soul in Leo, and so many people somehow working with the body and the fitness of the body in Sagittarius. And then when it comes to Aries, they're driven by the will. And the way DK said, no matter what your raised may be, if you're born in or under Aries, your will be strengthened. So the monadic will comes in there. The moon, it's ruled by it relates to the form. So, you know, the moon out of the five non-sacred planets has most to do with the physical body. I think it goes something like this. The moon, dense physical body. Earth, also non-sacred, etheric body. The planet, let's see now, the next one would be the astral body, and I do believe it could be considered to be Mars. And then the moon is going to represent the entire personality, or the vehicles, all the lunar vehicles, and the sun. Let's see, what have I got here so far? I've got the, what are the five planets here? Oh, Pluto, yeah, and Mars, and the Earth, and the sun, and the moon. It's not really the sun, it's a planet veiling the sun that has to do with the whole personality. And then there is the planet that is veiled by the moon. Oftentimes, it's sometimes called Rex, R-E-X. It's an undiscovered planet and apparently exists. And somewhere it is called that the moon is the king of planets. So the Rex means king. So we have the moon as the dense physical body, Earth as the etheric body, Mars as the astral body, Pluto as the mental, lower mental body, and the sun as a whole representing the entire integrated personality. So the lower man is in a way ruled by the five non-sacred planets, including the sun and the moon and the planets that they veil. But for practical purposes, we just say the moon is the form, and to a certain extent we're correct that the lives which came from the moon chain are invested in the form, and they are evolving towards humanhood within the form of the human being. Now, so the moon is the ruler of Virgo, right? Sun is the ruler of Leo, moon of Virgo, and esoterically considered, Jupiter is the esoteric ruler of Aquarius. And look at the term he uses, beneficent life. Now, life is working through the etheric body. Jupiter is the planet of benefaction, and this tells you a little bit about what we can expect in the Aquarian age, that working through the etheric body, we will begin to have the life beneficent, the life more abundantly. And finally, Pluto, the planet of death, it's the esoteric and hierarchical ruler of Pisces. But it's not ever the death that destroys consciousness. It enhances consciousness by destroying the impediments to consciousness. So what we've just got here are the four rulers of the four signs that were left out of the consideration, Leo, Virgo, Aquarius, Pisces. And we want to know what they do. And he says that if we look at the esoteric planets, it's going to show us, you know, that they are involved with the fusion of soul and form in order to fully demonstrate a state of awareness. Now, the second ray is not the only ray of Jupiter. Every planet is going to have three major rays, the monadic ray, the soul ray, and the sort of physical ray. And when it comes to Jupiter, I just know the seventh ray of ceremonial magic and ceremonialism in general is involved. So that when we talk about manifesting here, demonstrating a state of awareness, probably on the physical plane, the seventh ray of Jupiter, the ceremonial ray, is very important. Think about one of the most Jupiterian pieces of music you're ever going to run into. And Sir Edward Elgar, he, very much a Victorian composer, wrote this pomp and circumstance to which almost every high school graduation in the country uses, you know, and in marching down the aisle in the most ceremonial kind of way. That is the seventh ray, you know, the seventh ray of Jupiter in all its grandeur. Okay, so it will also be apparent to the astrologer of the future, and will become that in the next 100 years a little bit, as DK reveals more about astrology, along which lines the chart of the soul must be drawn. The major triangles and the three cosmic crosses will control his deductions as to the unfoldment of consciousness. It would just be wonderful if DK would do such a sample chart as this. Once he did say, if you're looking for the spirit, use blue triangles. If you're looking for consciousness, use yellow stars. If you're looking for the material circumstances of the individual, the karma, use a black square or a cross. So, you know, there's a lot of little indications, and then there is another triangle. It's called, in a way, the ABCs of astrology. Here's the triangle, the conception chart ruled by Uranus, the heartbeat chart ruled by Neptune, it's called the animation chart, and the birth chart ruled by Saturn. And take a look. There are your three synthesizing planets connected with three foundational charts of the human being. So anyway, the triangles indicate possibility. That fits, I think, with spirit quite well. The crosses indicate process and points of crisis. In a little while, not this time, we're going to get into the crises of the soul. And I think they are, you know, very interesting, and we can probably triangulate them to a certain extent. And then DK gives us a statement which we'll have to agree with him. There is, as I have said, no way of handling the science of triangles at length or exhaustively, for it is the science of the universal geometrical blueprint underlying the phenomenal worlds. So within the etheric bodies of space, the triangle is very prominent. You know, what is phenomenal anyway? Sometimes when we think about phenomena, we think about the lower 18 subplanes, but it all depends on your point of view. If you have a much higher point of view, then the whole cosmic physical plane is phenomenal, and a still higher point of view, then the 18 cosmic planes are phenomenal and have to be underlaid by something else. So anyway, triangles is the energetic support, in a way, of the whole cosmos. I'm trying to help us think in wider terms and along the way to recognize certain triangles which are effective in our life and which we can understand. Maybe there's many more we can't. So anyway, the universal geometrical blueprint underlying phenomenal worlds and is also closely related to karma. Well, think of it. The sign that is perhaps the most karmic sign in the zodiac is Libra. And that, you know, the idea is for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So there's always going to be a backlash for the bad, and there's going to be a compensatory wave for the good. And Libra is dramatized. It's one of those triangles in the sky. And Libra rules a creative hierarchy, the symbol of which is called the triple flowers. The triangle is the symbol of the Libra creative group of monads. So if I was going to go here and let's see if I can get it. Yeah, this would be it. The relationship of Libra to the triangle is very clear. Jnana Shakti, it's knowledge, the energy of the force of mind. And it is the third plane down and the fifth plane up. Why it's called water, I don't yet know, but it's worth pondering. And the triple flowers is the name of this hierarchy. And you know, what's really interesting is the numbers 3 and 8 are found together. There's the Roman numeral 3 and the 8 from above. In other words, when you look at the cosmic astral plane, there's 5 hierarchies, and there's 7 hierarchies here on the cosmic physical. 3 and 8 are two numbers closely associated together with the fifth ray, and to a certain extent with the third ray. 8 is Mercury, and Mercury is ultimately the third ray monad. So there's a lot of connections, but let's just say Libra rules, what's it called? Supermind. I think he calls it that. Gemini rules the usual soul mind, the usual aspects of mind. Libra, with his third ray, rules supermind, third ray, triangle, 3 parts. And the Aquarius rules universal mind, which is more than super mind. So built into these charts is all kinds of occult information, if we can examine it, you know, carefully. Again, I'm not going to get as far as I thought I might. Okay, so relating to karma, it concerns the first precipitation and the effect of the duality of manifestation of spirit and matter as they constitute one substance. You know, you always are going to have to triangulate the opposites. It's the way of resolving them. We have electric fire, we have fire by friction, and we have the neutralizer or equilibrizer, solar fire. There's always got to be a middle position between the opposites, and this creates the triangle. We're in the realm of Brahma, the ruler of the third aspect of divinity, and we begin to materialize when we're on the third plane. So triangles have a lot to do with materialization. And what is karma after all? You know, so many things, books and books are written about karma, but it's the attempt of the higher powers so to act upon the straying personality, the elemental life of our below, of our self in a lower expression, that lower expression aligns with the soul. In other words, what we need is the personality to align with the soul, and karma takes care of that. This is ultimately the reason for it. It's not to punish us or, you know, somehow say, oh, you've been bad, now you're going to suffer retribution. No, it's to get us in alignment with the spiritual activity. So it ultimately, karma has a very beneficent reason behind it to equilibrize all of the interactions so they suit the divine plan. Okay, but in its relation to esoteric astrology, it is possible to indicate certain fundamental interpretations of this relation, which will enable the astrologer to work out, eventually, the astrology of the soul. See, because right now we just have, what do we have? We have the astrology of the personality, and we have the astrology of how the soul might affect the personality. But we don't have the astrology of the soul on its own plane. We don't have the astrology of the soul or the astrology of the monad. We're just beginning to stretch towards the influence of the soul within the personality. That's as far as we've gotten at this present time. I've never seen anybody yet who has really worked out the astrology of the soul, but he says eventually it's coming. Enable the astrologer to work out eventually the astrology of the soul, to outline the horoscope of the ego, not just the personality or the relation between the ego on the higher mental plane and the lower aspect here, but to actually work out what's going on inside the soul body. When was it put together? What is it meant to express? Foster Bailey hints at this in one of his introductions, that there is a kind of a permanent signs connected with the higher ego, and we have to learn what they are, just the way we know that there are signs and constellations connected with the personality. So that lies ahead. To outline the horoscope of the ego and draw up the new types of charts which will demonstrate soul purpose on its own plane. We don't have that yet. And group relations also on the physical plane. And so to be of aid to the intelligent, dedicated personality, ponder on this. We have to be dedicated to the soul, and we have to learn the direction that the soul wants to take in its own right, because the soul is evolving in its own way, and we as personalities want to cooperate. So it means that we must strive towards soul consciousness, which is group consciousness. Now, I'm going to avoid, I wanted to get into a triangle, which is basically Virgo, Pisces, Leo. And here's a picture of it. Maybe I can find it. There it is. But it's a whole new subject, and it's a very important subject. So instead of doing that, I'm going to... I'm afraid my eyes are bigger than my stomach here. I somehow thought that we would be rolling along on that, but no, we're not, because I talk too much. And I'm going to bring us to this point where we're just about to get into the importance of this particular triangle, one triad of energy. Okay. So that's up for next time. And, are we studying astrology or are we studying triangles? And I think, you know, if we're fair, we have to say that we are studying both, inevitably. DK said that astrology was his most occult book because it dealt with nothing else but the science of energies. And basically, when you study the many possible triangles, that's as well what you have. The practical side of triangles is based on goodwill and love and light, and it's work that must go on. But behind it all is the theory of what is happening between the planets. Well, it's a theory to us. To the masters, it's confirmed. What is happening in the solar system And we're actually within our planetary scheme in the solar system and in the immediate local cosmos beyond our solar system, which involves the heart and the head center of the one about whom not to be said. So the secondary benefit in this kind of study to you will be that you're going to pick up a lot of understanding of what esoteric astrology really is. And of course, he'll probably come along, you know, in just a few years and give us some astonishing material, which will fill in a lot of the gaps that have been left from his work with Alice Bailey. So, you know, do plan on another incarnation quickly, because that will allow you to take full advantage of the third installment of this, as he calls it, series of bridging treatises between the old spiritual approach and the new one. Let's see if I can find that, because I'm, you know, slightly misquoting it, and I want to see if I can, let's see, he calls it, sorry for that noise, bridging treatises. Well, we've got two, so that's hopeful. It will be under the same impression. In the next century and early in the next century, an initiate will appear and will carry on their teaching. It will be under the same impression, that's him, for my task is not yet completed, and this series of bridging treatises between the material knowledge of man and the science of the initiates has yet another phase to run. So we haven't heard the last word on all of this by any means, and this is just a repeat of what he said earlier. More knowledge on astrology is on its way, and we don't know how long it will last, and we don't know whether it will be 30 years' work again. We don't know, but we do know that the Tibetan will be good to his word, and more information is coming, and the least we can do is assimilate the best we can what we have. Okay, friends. So that's as far as I can go right now. And I'll just ask you if you have comments, questions, whatever you have. This is our time to deal with that. Whatever in the book so far of what we've done, we haven't covered a lot of pages, but what we have looked at pretty closely is four signs of the zodiac, which have everything to do with our development of initiatory consciousness, universal consciousness. And when we say universal, we don't mean the entire cosmos. We pretty well mean the solar system. The solar system used to be called a universe. And it was a long time before galactic theory really came into understanding. And what the masters are allowed to do is they cannot give material ahead of time that is not slated to be given. But if the precocity of man arrives at the truth, they have to confirm the truth. So basically, Aquarius and Pisces that give us the fifth degree initiate and beyond are leading us to solar systemic consciousness. And, you know, right now, we're not there yet, but if we can just begin to get the consciousness of the soul, that will be an important thing. Okay, so any thoughts or questions you have on this or on occultism in general? Because, you know, it's one big book, it's one big book. And I think these question marks I'm looking at I've already dealt with them. So let me know, is there anything that you would like to discuss, whether it comes from what I've just read and your progression through or to Christ consciousness, which is soul consciousness, and group consciousness, and eventually into the initiate's consciousness, or whether it has to do with something else? And, you know, I wanted to say also that I hope that it becomes possible for you to review once we put these up on Makara, or maybe later on the YouTube, review these matters, because a lot of information is discussed and given here, and one pass through is probably not enough for any of us. So, you know, apply yourself and review. Okay, so now we seem to have Karen again. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, Michael. You said early on that you mentioned that the Davik atmosphere, which we call a sign. So I've always had some difficulty understanding the difference, but the constellations are angelic, archangelic beings that are projected.
Way beyond that. Way. They're beyond anything we call an archangel in the earth. And the highest kind of archangel that is named in the secret doctrine is a planetary deity. And these constellations are, you know, they're much in advance of Solar Logoi. So they have an altogether higher form of energy, which needs to be adapted to any receiving planet. And you know how sometimes you take an orange and you peel it and you get an X number of sections that are going around, if it's one of those eating sections. When Alan Leo talked about receiving constellational energies, he said, take a look at what we call the loons. You know, each one of these sections of the orange is like an area particularly attuned to a particular constellation. And they always begin, because we're dealing with the tropical system, they always begin at the vernal equinox. So Aries, no matter what star the vernal equinox is pointing towards, and it will keep on changing, you know, every 72 years it moves back 1 degree. At the first point of spring, you have your first loon, or you have your Davik atmosphere, which transforms and steps down these immensely powerful energies for adaptation on the earth. Now you might ask, does the sun have the same system of solar loons? And maybe it does, and maybe the progression of what we've got is from the constellation to the sun to the planet. But let's just say there's no comparison of the power of a constellation to what can be used by a planetary deity. It's way beyond that, unless it is properly transformed. So archangels are not that high, but they're very high, and the highest archangel is a planetary logos according to what we've been given. But there's probably these other systems where archangel means something else. But, you know, we can't go there yet. We can just deal with archangels within our planet and archangels within the solar system. And when we think about constellational logoi, okay? Constellational logoi. When we think about those, we're talking about the great lives which inform X number of solar logoi who make up the constellation. Does that put things in proportion? But maybe I spoke too soon.
No, that's very helpful. That is. So it's always, again, a stepping down and a stepping down.
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is. If DK and KH can sit there and have a conversation, about whether they should widen the channel in an individual disciple and decide can't do it. It would just be too much. It would upset this disciple. You can well imagine that the principle involved is carried all the way up to the higher beings who have as their responsibility the stimulation of the lower beings. So who was it said, I don't want to get fried? We had a humorous thing the other night, one of our, Suzanne, and she's kind of instant poetry and instant humor at the same time. And she made a lot of egg analogies. And the very first thing she said, I don't want to get fried, you know, and she went into all the egg things. But we would get fried this is very interesting. The first ray, one of the names of the first ray is the power that touches and then withdraws. Well, why doesn't it just keep on touching? Because it the finger of God too, you know. So that's another name for that first ray deity. The idea is if you touch too long, you destroy the form of that which you want to stimulate. So Shambhala, DK tells us, exquisitely equilibrates the amount of energy that any form can take in order to raise it and stimulate it, but not to destroy it or fry it, you know. So you're dealing with huge beings out there who are informing the constellations, and relatively minor beings like our little planetary Logos, who's not even a sacred planet, but plenty sacred as far as we're concerned. Okay. All right. So that's.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's that. Okay. Thank you, Karen. Okay. What else? Anything else, friends? Raise your hand if you want to speak. If you don't want to speak, you can write a question. So far, I only have, or a statement. And like I say, I've learned that I have to open up any area of occultism, because, you know, we don't often have a chance to deal with questions that are on our mind. And sometimes you might be able to answer a question or offer an idea on the text that we have read. But occultism is like one big book, you know. So whatever is on your mind in terms of occultism, you can be free to make a statement about or to ask a question about. I don't have all the answers, of course, but I make a fair try and hope to throw a little light on the subject. So is there anything else that we may have? I know, you know, this is a fairly daunting subject, and not everybody is going to be an esoteric astrologer, but even Alice Bailey was not an esoteric astrologer. And that presented a bit of a limitation to DK because she didn't have the science of it under her belt, but she knew enough about the generalities to do excellent lectures and talk about the important things related to consciousness. Okay. Okay. If there's, let me just give you an encouraging word. If you steep yourself in this knowledge and don't worry yourself too much, as they say, you know, pull yourself up by the roots to see if you're growing, you know, obviously that is self-defeating, you will grow. And your knowledge of these things will grow, and you'll find your understanding, you know, it'll pop up when you need it. Just don't worry about it. What does he say? Well, it just slipped my mind. Yeah, he says, keep silence and the light will enter in. This is one of those aphorisms, one of those injunctions. Now, look, he said also, a lot of disciples would do a whole lot better if they talked more in the right way about the right things. So he didn't, you know, he almost made a joke of it when he said that a lot of disciples seem to think that if they want to take initiation, they can't talk. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of funny. But on the other hand, there are moments to be silent and moments to talk. And in general, an attitude of quiet sensitivity about the life that's going on around you will encourage your consciousness to grow. And that's the business we're in. We are increasing the sensitivity of our consciousness. It's the great second aspect. It has to do with the soul. And when it comes to the development of form, we've done a lot of that already. If we develop the consciousness, the form will follow suit and develop and in its own way. That's why we have to, you know, look, people say, oh, I wish I could live forever. Well, of course you do in your inner principles, but you always need new vehicles because your consciousness is increasing and you need a vehicle reorganized, reborn, whatever, reincarnated to meet the needs of that more highly developed consciousness, which has been developing within you. So the wheel is always turning, you know, and we are higher now than we were before. And, you know, it's an amazing system. There's just been endless universes, and you can't say this is the first, this is the last. And we've been the star player in every one. And I don't mean we as a personality. I mean we as the one being who's having this universe, you know. So there's nothing to worry about, really, when you look at things in a big enough picture, and your growth within cosmos is assured. You may have some rough patches, and this might be a tough life, or it might be that in this life there are tough periods and all that, but we are going to definitely grow within the context of this universe, and we're going to discover that when it's all said and done, the inner being is always perfect and it has nowhere to go and nothing to do except, you know, it is that perfection itself. When we have a universe, then we have a play, a dance, a drama. We have something where there's certain rules and you have to work it all out. And, you know, to like an artist painting, or a composer composing, there's a, you know, what they go through to get a beautiful thing at the end is pretty difficult for, I mean, you know, read about this, you know, the struggling artist, or maybe you are that yourself. It can be difficult, but then it's worth it at the end. Well, it's the same way with the universe. There's all kinds of paths you can take, and you get sometimes lost in the swamp, and sometimes you just go down the wrong road, but every disciple gets, straightens himself or herself out, gets up, shakes off, dries off, whatever, continues on the path. So we need, what DK says, confidence in the inner God. Now, some people call it the higher power, but, you know, it's ultimately the monad and the angel. Confidence in the inner God, which is guiding our present incarnation and our series of incarnations. And when you read books like this, it lets you know the quality of things you have to work with. So it helps you be more intelligent, more efficient, more satisfied, less bewildered. It's very useful. So I hope I'm making myself clear. If you know the rules, you'll know how to play the game.
Michael?
And that's what we're, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yes, BL?
I thought you were finishing up there.
Oh, you know
Ishtar
me.
Has...
If I'm, left, Oh, yes, she has now a question.
A question on the triangle between Polaris, Dubey, and Merrick.
Polaris ray 1, Dubey ray 5, Merrick ray 6. Dubey, the personality, Leo. Merrick, the soul, Aries. Polaris, the monad, the star of direction in the tail of the bear. You can say it's associated with Sagittarius.
Did you read the question?
In the little bear, and so does the great bear. Yeah, father and son, and they're all part of the one about whom not maybe said. Yeah, I was getting to it. The little bear is like the Ajna center of the one about whom not maybe said, and the great bear is like the seven internal stars in the head, whatever that head is, of the one about whom not may be said. And basically they are that triangle that represents a spirit, soul, and personality. Interesting that Dubey, with its Leo connection, represents personality. Merrick, you have to go a little bit farther out. It's farther from Polaris than is Dubey. Dubey is pretty close. It represents Aries, the sixth ray, and the soul. And the star Polaris represents the monad directing us in the right direction, the path of destiny. Okay, we always hear about destiny, and DK calls it monadic destiny. So at the moment, we follow Polaris, which is our pole star at this time. It won't always be, but it is at this time. And we're pointing towards that, and we rely upon this great supergiant star. There's some kind of constellation invisible up there. It all has to do with the spirit, and we have to learn how to follow our guiding star, which incidentally has just changed signs. The great bear is the father, the little bear is the son, and the blind for that is Sirius. Sirius is the blind for the little bear. And together they have 14 major stars, and that gives us the important 14 that is so much found in Egyptian mythology. So the idea is we don't live up to the lower Leo of Dubey. We live up to Merrick and the power to initiate of the soul, and eventually we'll find our way being guided via monadic destiny via Polaris. Now, I don't know when the switch occurs, and there are probably some times when those two pointers are more exactly aligned with Polaris, and then they move on because of the gyration around the of our axis, and so there's a change, and they will point to other pole stars, and according to how they, which pole star it is, so will be the quality of the destiny of the planet and the destiny of the people who follow the monad. Okay, so I hope that gives enough to think about, and yes, the one about whom not may be said, however many of those there are, there is in the head, in the Ajna center, and maybe, you know, something right up there for Polaris at this time. Yeah, okay. It's an interesting subject. And now, look, that doesn't mean that Dubey is not a tremendous star. It's kind of a really, really bright star and really powerful. But people can use that Leo energy, as you know, for very personal purposes. And it ends up being a big obstruction. What I've noticed, and maybe DK said, that when you're dealing with the Black Lodge and materialism, Leo, in the beginning stages, is so often involved in Rome, in France, the rising sun in Japan, and also, let's see, what's it, one more? Yeah, well, Germany, of course. The leaders had this tremendous Leo in their horoscope, but of a lower will kind. The personality got the will, ran with the will, and forgot the love aspect. Okay? Okay, so there you go. Okay, Ishtar. And what else? Anything else? You know, the thing is, always have optimism about what you will learn. You know, what the human being has done, the human being can do. And we will inevitably, one day, everything that's in Master DK's books will be our own knowledge. He will have moved on, of course, but we'll be in that kind of position only to discover there's ever so much more. So just have confidence in yourself and keep on absorbing the great wisdom. And since you're studying with Master DK, we all are to a certain extent, we absorb it in detail. I sometimes joke that a particular medicine like aspirin that second-rate types take is called Absorbitol. And I had another one that went with Absorbitol, you know, but I forgot what it was. Take a couple of Absorbitols if you're on the second ray and get into the books. Okay, don't let them just sit on your shelf, but actually, you know, a little bit every day and later an hour every day and, you know, get into them because the reward is very, very great. Okay, so BL, anything else?
No, that's all I see right now.
Okay. All right, so I'll tell you what. So, you know, Tuya was here for a little while. She has two webinars, one following another. So she had to leave after the first hour or so. And, you know, basically, Ask Triangle General 31LB. I'm going to just see how this works out. I don't know. I always like to have a little bit of a picture here. Okay. I don't know. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's just my computer is not going very fast, but okay. I'll just live with it. We'll just have an image, right? And here's an image of somehow the idealized image of the Triangles Network covering the Earth, but of course it goes much farther than that and is involved in the whole solar system. So somehow just make sure you have at least one triangle you're working with. That'll be the beginning. And just say, hey, look, you know, two other people, you'll figure out who they are and say, look, if we can just think for 5 minutes a day and spread goodwill and love and light in our triangle, it's going to help humanity through the power of thought. So you can find a triangle. I know you can do that. And consider it important to do that. You might be shy at first and wonder, is there anyone that wants to cooperate with you? But yes, someone will cooperate with you. So the idea here, let's just realize in a sort of a little reflection here at the end, that one day there's going to be a very full earthly network of etheric triangles. And one day we will really be able to help esoterically. Like Master Moria said, half the world thinks and the other half carries out the thought. So let's be among the thinkers. And that every planet in our solar system either has the triangles in their etheric network or is acquiring them. I sometimes wonder whether a planet like Jupiter isn't already getting a few circles or spheres, just the way the sun has, Jupiter being so close to the sun. So we're involved here in a task of helping humanity become inspired by the soul, you know, light, love, and power of the right kind. And we're involved in the task of elevating our planet towards sacredness. One day, it's going to be a sacred base of the spine center, a kundalini center, for our solar logos. It's a big, you know, it's not just a personal thing. So this is one of the most important esoteric tasks you can undertake. At least get a hold of one triangle and say the great invocation every day as you spread the energies through the visualization of your triangle, and maybe others will come along. So take it seriously. Even though it's not seen by anybody, and most people think, well, what are you doing? You're only thinking, but they have no idea about the power of thought. So let's close our reflection. Just put yourself on self-mute and we'll say together the great invocation, because if we're not on self-mute, it gets all ragged in terms of time. But if you're on self-mute, you can say it out loud wherever you are, if you want. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, thank you, everyone. We will progress. We've got lots of material, and you're going to learn a lot if you are attentive. And tomorrow morning, we're on the morning schedule, reappearance of the Christ at 5 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, GMT. And we'll continue as usual. There'll be another webinar in the morning on Friday, and it'll be the Glamour webinar. It's a big problem today, and we'll keep working at it so that it doesn't overpower humanity. And then on Saturday and Sunday, the soul of nations and attracting resources for hierarchical purposes. So thank you very much for working with us, and I appreciate. Okay, actually. Walter wrote something in 10,000 years. Big Dipper stars Dubé and Merrick will point much more directly towards Polaris. That sounds good. So that star of destiny will be even more powerful. Thanks, Walter, for that piece of information. So everybody, lots of love, many blessings. And Tuya and I will be with you as much as we can. I will have to be going up to the Little Bear, speaking of Polaris, Little Bear Meditation Center, maybe in another 10 days or so, but we'll sort of resume up there the best we can and continue with our work together. So we're on the right track. Let's just keep persisting. That's the main thing. I still persist. That's the main thing. Okay. We'll be seeing you. And thank you, BL, for helping us there on the technical side. See you later. Bye-bye.